Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. President Trump signed an executive order last week directing the federal government to use part of the Civil Rights Act to combat anti-Semitism. The order extends Title VI protections to Jews in the U.S. Title VI prohibits organizations from receiving federal funding if those organizations are found to discriminate based on race, color, or national origin. So two things there. First, the organizations the Trump administration is thinking about are colleges and universities. Second, that language about race, color, or national origin, meaning the executive order seems to classify Jewishness as a nationality. Does that help fight anti-Semitism or fuel anti-Semitic tropes? So this hour on Point, Jewish voices on the president's executive order. And you can join us, Jewish Americans. Does being classified as a race or nationality help combat anti-Semitism in America? Join us online on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us now from Boston is Susanna Heschel. She is a professor of Jewish studies at Dartmouth College. Her scholarship focuses on Jewish-Christian relations in Germany during the 19th and 20th century and the history of anti-Semitism. Professor Heschel, welcome to On Point.
Thank you very much.
Also with us from Washington is Michael Brenner. He is director of the Center for Israel Studies and professor of Israel Studies at American University. His recent op-ed in the Washington Post is titled, "Why President Trump's Executive Order to Fight Anti-Semitism is Dangerous for Jews." We have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Professor Brenner, welcome to you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So first of all, Professor Heschel, let me just start with you. When the president signed this executive order saying that he believes it would be an effective tool to combat anti-Semitism on American campuses, what's your response to that? Do you think he's right?
I think there is a problem on some American campuses. I don't think it's confined to campuses. There is a critique that's developed of Jews and of Zionism on the left, and that's what needs to be addressed. But this is not the way to address it. So, first of all, if people are uttering really hateful language at times toward Jews and toward Israel and toward Zionism, that needs to be outsmarted. Their arguments need to be combated. We don't simply tell them, you can't say this. We think of ways we can, in fact, overcome the arguments they're making. Let's engage with them. So that's the first problem. And the second is calling Jews a nationality is a very dangerous old trope. It's a problem that anybody who studies studies Jewish history in the modern period recognizes is dangerous. Why? Because from the beginning of the emergence of the nation states in the 18th century, 19th century in Europe, the argument was made the Jews are separate. They're a separate nationality and are not members of the French nation, the German nation, and so forth. That's the problem. So he is repeating by his executive order something that has been a terrible problem for Jews for several hundred years and ended up with their exclusion, with anti-Semitism, and ultimately, you know what happened in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor Brenner, the history here that we must be mindful of is what you wrote about in the Washington Post. So tell us more. What do you make of Professor Heschel's beginning analysis here?
I very much agree with what she said. I think it might well be a well-meant executive order addressing a real problem that I do not want to deny at all. Does it fulfill its purpose? Does it lead us to the goal we want to reach? I would say probably not. For a historian like my colleague Professor Heschel and myself, it recalls all kinds of instances where Jews in history were classified. Let me take an example. Even in the more recent past, we don't have to go back to the 19th or early 20th century. The Soviet Union and even Russia in the 1990s classified Jews as a nation. Now, they were Soviet citizens, but just as there were different nationalities, Russians, Ukrainians, Jews were classified as a nationality. And I think in modern history, what we see is that it was usually the state that decided how to classify the Jews, not the Jews themselves very often. Let's say this Soviet Jew, a woman from Moscow, moved from Moscow to Berlin in the 1990s. Her Jewishness would be classified by German authorities until this very day as religion. It's just as Jewish nationality was a category in a Russian passport, Jewish religion is officially a category in German papers when you register in your place of residence. Now, it becomes more complicated. The same person moves on to Israel.
Mm.
Their Jewishness officially is a nationality. There is no Israeli nationality. There's Israeli citizenship. So the same person first is a Jew by nationality, then by religion, then by nationality. Her own identity probably didn't change. And American Jewish history did not have this classification, the categorization from the state where you have to register your Jewishness as a religion or a nationality or, God forbid, a race as in Nazi Germany. It was left up to the Jews. Now, I don't think the executive order will change that. But what it did, it opened a discussion of classifying the Jews, which I believe is counterproductive.
Now, Professor Heschel, first of all, let's be clear here that similar efforts, legislative efforts through Congress were underway in the Obama administration, I believe as far back as the Bush administration as well. So this isn't necessarily a new idea. It's just that President Trump is the one who brought it to fruition via an executive order. So just wanted to make note of that. But I actually wanted to ask you, Professor Heschel, your father is Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So and he fled Nazi Europe.
Yes, he did.
In 1940?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yes.
And obviously a great voice in the civil rights movement in America as well. I'm wondering, given that family context of yours, I mean, tell us how that informs how you see this moment.
So first of all, what Professor Brenner said was very important. Yes, one goes from nationality, and the next thing you know, you come to race. And what he pointed to also about the Soviet Union is very important. Mm-hmm. For Jews to have a stamp in their passport, J, you're a Jew. You're classified that way. What did that lead to? Well, that also led to all kinds of quotas. How many Jews are permitted to study medicine at this university or computer science and so forth? This opens a terrible door to some very dangerous kinds of activities that a government can undertake and the private institutions can. And then there's also the question of the social fabric. So yes, my father was living in Nazi Germany. He moved to Germany in 1927 to be a student at the university. And he was there when Hitler came to power in 1933, and he saw what developed after that. And it was slow. It was incremental. And at first people thought, well, and I remember this from my childhood, from my father and his refugee scholar colleagues who had come over. Couldn't believe it at the time. Hitler, the German people would never elect someone like that. It's a fluke. He would only last a few months. The Germans are too well-educated, too sophisticated for someone like that. And so, yes, this entire Trump regime is shocking. It's just shocking to me. And it makes me feel that what they experienced, my parents' generation, is in some ways, I'm feeling it again. Now, I also want to say that by classifying Jews as a nationality, as Trump did in this executive order, it also gives fodder to right-wing crazy people in this country who are armed with guns and who take those guns and start shooting Jews in synagogues. They're going to say, you're a nationality, of course. He's supporting them. I don't understand how a president issues an executive order that's supposed to be protective of Jews on the one hand, and on the other hand, speaks in all kinds of horrible old anti-Semitic canards. You Jews only care about money, he says, to a Jewish group. You're going to elect me. You can't control me with your money the way you control other political candidates, and on. Both the fine people on both sides, he said after Charlottesville. What is this? What kind of ugliness? People also ignored Hitler's anti-Semitism. They thought that was marginal, just a technique for getting himself in power.
Well, so Michael Brenner, do you want to comment on that? Because, I mean, the president very clearly, when he signed the executive order, in fact, let me just play a moment here from that signature, when the signing ceremony, he said he's doing it to combat anti-Semitism on American campuses.
This is our message to universities. If you want to accept the tremendous amount of federal dollars that you get every year, you must reject anti-Semitism. It's very simple.
Do you see the same contradiction, Professor Brenner, that Professor Heschel just laid out?
Look, I still see a big difference between Germany 1933 and the United States in 2019 and between the different administrations. What I do see is that in the last 3 years, the climate has become almost intolerable in many, not just university campuses. Look at the synagogue attacks and other attacks against Jews in this country. The climate concerning anti-Semitism, by the way, not only in the United States, in Europe even more so, has become intolerable. That has a lot to do with the tone set in a public discourse that lacks civility, the basic tenets of civility. And so I think whenever you have a discourse like that, anti-Semitism is on the rise. I can connect with Professor Heschel's family story. My parents were not as lucky. They didn't get out of Europe. They survived the Holocaust in Europe. Big part of my family did not. And I grew up in Germany after the war. And there we have laws which actually forbid the denial of the Holocaust and other anti-Semitic tropes, and it is these laws which, unfortunately, as much as I see they were necessary in Germany, didn't really help to solve the problem of neo-Nazism and anti-Semitism.
So Professor Brenner and Professor Heschel, stand by. We have to take a quick break. We'll hear from more voices when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about President Trump's executive order signed last week that classifies Jewishness as a race or nationality. He signed the executive order, he says, in an attempt to help combat anti-Semitism on U.S. campuses. But we're talking to a variety of Jewish American voices today on what they think about this. And we're getting a lot of comments coming in here online. For example, Marlon Mackey on Facebook says, "We live in the upside down. Anything Trump says you should read is backwards. This is a dog whistle to his fanatical base." Whereas on our website, we have a commenter saying, "If you are so deranged with hatred of Trump and rabid partisanship that you are prepared to denounce administrative efforts to stop anti-Semitism, then you should immediately seek help." I'm joined today by Professor Susanna Heschel. She's a professor of Jewish studies at Dartmouth College. Her scholarship focuses on Jewish-Christian relations in Germany during the 19th and 20th century and the history of anti-Semitism as well. Professor Michael Brenner joins us from Washington. He is chair in Israel studies and director of American University's Center for Israel Studies. He had a recent op-ed in the Washington Post about this executive order. We have a link to it at onpointradio.org. Let's get a couple of calls here really quick if we can. Let's start with Richard, who's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. I echo to a large extent the comments by both Professors Heschel and Brenner. I happen to actually be someone who lived in Israel for 3 years and served in the IDF, so I actually have Israeli nationality. I was born in Washington, and I'm proud to be an American. I do not consider Judaism my nationality. I think it is very dangerous. Charitably, one could say that perhaps Mr. Trump was well-meaning, but like many things that he has done, he shoots from the hip. I think this is very, very dangerous for Jews. I do think it plays into tropes. And like so many things he has done, the American Jewish community and Jewish identity is something complex. It's an ethnicity. It's more than a religion, but it's not a nationality. All Jews don't agree with everything that the Israelis do. And I just think this is a very counterproductive thing to do, even if one wants to be charitable to Mr. Trump and assume that he meant well. Mm. And I'll take my comment off the air and listen to the comments from Professor Heschel and Brenner. And thank you both very much.
Richard, thank you for your call. So, Professor Heschel, would you like to respond to Richard?
Yes, I essentially agree with what Richard said, and I agree with Professor Brenner. I also want to raise the question of tactics. We all agree that there's a problem on college campuses, at least some campuses. I don't find this at Dartmouth to be a problem, but nonetheless, I see the problem. And it's a problem of, as I said, of a left-wing kind of political analysis that equates Zionism with racism, as per the UN declaration many decades ago that was, in fact, withdrawn. But what do we do? If we go to a college campus, do I tell students, you may not say this thing about Jews? You're not allowed to speak those words. You're not allowed to listen to this or that analyst who, in fact, might even be an Israeli critic of Israel, let's say. Where do we draw the lines? College campuses are places for, in fact, free expression. And college students often, what shall I say, they speak and they do things that a normal adult doesn't do. They sometimes are quite extreme. But again, I'm concerned about the mood, both on the right and the left in this country. They're mirror images of each other with mm-hmm. anger and resentment, a lot of hatred and a lot of division, and a rejection of the idea of creating alliances, and that disturbs me. Mm-hmm. And I think the arguments themselves need to be combated by other arguments, better and smarter arguments.
Right. Well, Professor Brenner, I also want to explore for a moment here the question of nationality in the American context, the particularities of the American context here, right? Because, I mean, America as a nation, as an idea or ideals is something that has drawn people from around the world here. And in your call or article in the Washington Post, you point out that in most polls, American Jews describe their Jewishness as a cultural or religious identity, while their nationality is American. So tell me more about why about that.
That's a great question. I think we really have to distinguish between a colloquial use of the word the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, on the one hand, and a legal category, which nationality is and has been in many countries, including Israel. There you have a distinction between citizenship and nationality. So, in fact, there is no Israeli nationality. Many Israelis fought, went to the Supreme Court in Israel to have an Israeli nationality, which would include Jews and Arabs. That doesn't exist. There's Israeli citizenship. But people have a different category in their IDs, which says nationality, and I would be Jewish or Arab or something else. In America, this does not exist. We don't have a distinction between citizenship and nationality. And America, of course, is a country with people of so many different national origins. What is interesting in Title VI of what we are discussing, civil rights in the legal basis of the executive order, it talks about national origin. So if you ask Jewish immigrants today or 50 years ago or 100 years ago, was your national origin Jewish or perhaps Russian or Polish or German or French, you'll get different answers. Mm. Some will say, yes, Jewish. Others will say, maybe German. My religion was Jewish. So there are different answers to this. But the point is that in America, we don't have that distinction. And I think that's not a road we want to go.
Interesting. Well, Professor Brenner and Professor Heschel, stand by here because I'd like to welcome into the conversation Jonathan Tobin. He is editor-in-chief of Jewish News Syndicate. He joins us from Philadelphia, and his latest piece is titled Trump's Anti-Semitism Order is a Rorschach Test for Jews. Jonathan Tobin, welcome to you.
Thanks, Magna. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us more. How do you see this as a Rorschach test for Jews?
Well, we're living in this hyper-partisan moment in American history when everything seems to revolve around partisan loyalties and, in particular, views about Trump. And I think the anger at Trump on the part of the left in the United States and much, about half of the country has distorted many debates. But it has, in particular, done this one. If you're so angry about Trump that you're willing to compare him to the Nazis, willing to speak of us as if we're living in the last years of the Weimar Republic, then I don't think we can have a very productive conversation about an effort here where whatever you think about Trump, this is something that even centrist, even very critical groups of Trump, something like a group like the Anti-Defamation League, even a magazine like Slate published an article last week making it clear that this is not about creating a Jewish nationality. It's not about redefining Judaism under the federal law. It's about applying protections under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act to Jews when they are perceived as having a shared race or ethnicity or national origin, as is the case could also be for Muslims and Sikhs. And the opinion validating this interpretation of the law, that this is these protections should be extended, was written by Tom Perez, who was then Assistant Attorney General and now the chair of the Democratic National Committee and a fierce critic, as fierce a partisan critic of Trump as you can imagine. We're going off on tangents here, which really have nothing to do with the case, which is about protecting Jewish students in an environment where groups are engaging in active anti-Semitic invective, according to the definition accepted by the State Department in dozens of countries under the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which is not about – this is not about is it okay to criticize Israel. Millions of Israelis get up every day and criticize their own government just as hundreds of millions of Americans get up every day and criticize their government. This is about a BDS movement and its allies, which engage in invective that is not merely anti-Semitic, and it's about denying rights to Jews that are not denied to others. It's about singling out Jews in a way that is clearly based on anti-Semitic tropes and traditional anti-Semitic rhetoric and imagery. And when colleges and universities sort of enable this, do not act to protect students against actions which really set them apart, make them create a hostile environment for them, then they're in violation of Title VI. Mm. And that's what this law does. It doesn't really change the law as it is. It just means that the Department of Education is now inclined to enforce the law, to bring these colleges and universities into observance of the law as they would against actions that singled out blacks, Hispanics, or any other minority.
Yeah. So I'm going to let Professor Heschel and Professor Brenner respond here in just a second. But Jonathan Tobin, let me ask you. I mean, we are living in times which really test the imagination, I have to say, at least in my lifetime. Because I hear what you're saying, but on the other hand, this executive order has come through the presidency of Donald Trump, who during his campaign. His campaign, you know, on Twitter invoked terrible anti-Semitic tropes when they were sending out tweets with the Star of David and a pile of cash. And as Professor Heschel pointed out, this is a president who, after white nationalist, extreme far right people marched on a campus shouting about blood and soil and they will not replace us, said there was good people on both sides. I'm just wondering how do we understand this executive order in that broader context as well?
Listen, I'm no great fan of Donald Trump. And as Selena Zito famously said a few years ago, Trump's opponents take him literally but not seriously, but his supporters take him seriously but not literally. Trump has said all sorts of sort of at times crazy, often inappropriate things. He's coarsened our rhetoric. He's not the only one who's coarsening our rhetoric right now. But, you know, it's true he said a lot of, you know, nutty things. But the point is the policies of this administration have not been anti-Semitic. You know, you can parse every one of his statements. You know, he conflated opposition to removing Confederate statues with a neo-Nazi march. And because he's Trump, he refused to walk it back. But the point is this is the president who has acted against anti-Semitism through his Department of Education even before this, enforcing laws that the Obama administration acknowledged but would not enforce. He is the most pro-Israel president that we've ever had, whether you like him or don't like him. We have to examine his policies as they are. And to put this in a context as if we're living in the last years of the Weimar Republic, it just shows, I mean, people are not thinking clearly either about Trump or his administration or really the atmosphere in which we're living. I mean, that's when I speak of a Rorschach test. If you're so angry about Trump that you can't think clearly about what he's actually doing, what his actual policies are, if you think he's evil incarnate, obviously you're going to think everything he does is wrong. But that's your turning things upside down. It's not he who's turning things upside down.
Is
if you can interpret, you know, policies that are clearly aimed at repressing anti-Semitism and say that they are somehow anti-Semitic, that's just wrong. I mean, you know, this isn't like creating line five on the Soviet passport for Jews. This is not about singling out Jews. This is not a dog whistle to white racists. This is something that white racists and BDS activists agree on and both oppose.
Is it possible, though, to see his – we can't look at – what I'm suggesting is that do we take a terrible risk in looking at his policies in isolation? Because leadership is not just policy instruments. It's also behavior. It's language. It's the projection of values. So if – while his policy instruments may find a lot of support amongst various members of the Jewish community – we can't look at that alone without also saying, and at the same time, he has done things and said things to embolden anti-Semitic belief and behavior also in America.
That's an argument that people on the left make. I think he said as many things that clearly are aimed at opposing anti-Semites. I mean, you know, when you take a deep dive into the world of the far left and the far right, one of the interesting things is how they support each other and how they are opposed to Trump's policies here. You know, he is a unique figure and unique not in a good way in the way he acts and speaks. But to credit him for the global rise in anti-Semitism, which even the Obama administration said was a rising tide sweeping across Europe, looking to establish footholds in the United States on college campuses, then we're not talking seriously. We're not thinking about what is happening. We're just expressing our feelings about who Trump is as a person. And that is not a serious policy discussion. That's a partisan rant. That is not something I really, you know, I don't think is very productive in terms of this issue or really any other.
Just to be clear, Professor Heschel, I'm going to turn right to you in a second. But just to be clear, I would not credit President Trump with the global rise of anti-Semitism. But Professor Heschel, go ahead.
Yes, I agree. But let me see if we can find some common ground here, Jonathan Tobin. I would appreciate it, for example, if President Trump would speak out on behalf of Soros, of George Soros, and tell people to stop the propaganda against him, targeting him as a very well-known Jew. I would appreciate it if he would tell the Republican Party to stop using images of cash in their ads. As a president, he has power of his of his pulpit, power of his voice. He's deeply respected in the Republican Party, and there is much he can do in addition to being concerned about the college campuses. I would not compare Trump to Hitler and say that we're living in Nazi Germany, but I do think that I and an awful lot of Jews are frightened when synagogues are attacked, when a kosher supermarket is attacked, and so on. And it's very hard not to think back. And it's of deep concern. What really should we do? I don't think the question is right now whether to defend Trump or attack him, but how do we combat both left-wing and right-wing anti-Semitic propaganda? What's the best way to do it? I think that these are different phenomena, even though, as I agree with you, that they in many ways are mirror images. But college campuses are unique, and they deserve a certain kind of attention that we aren't really giving. How to speak to young people. I teach them in my classes all the time. What do you do when they start mouthing terrible things that we can't stand, that are outrageous? Part of being 19 years old is to do outrageous things and to say outrageous things. And one question is, do these views last? Do they persist in their voting patterns by the time they're 25 or 30 out in the world with a job and a family and so forth? But I'm not sure that a policy like this is really the right way to address it, because I'm afraid that it will also create further resentment of Jews. And look what you Jews are getting for yourselves.
Well, Professor Heschel, forgive the interruption here because we have to take a quick break. Professor Susanna Heschel, Professor Michael Brenner, and Jonathan Tobin, stand by here for a moment. We are talking about President Trump's executive order signed last week in an effort to combat anti-Semitism that classifies Jewishness as race, origin, or nationality. And we'll take a bunch of calls when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about President Trump's executive order signed last week in an effort to combat anti-Semitism on American college campuses. The order does so, or attempts to do so, by defining Jewishness under national law as a nationality or race. Now, we're joined today by Jonathan Tobin. He's editor-in-chief of Jewish News Syndicate. Susanna Heschel joins us. She's professor of Jewish studies at Dartmouth College. And Michael Brenner is with us as well. He's a professor and director of American University Center for Israel Studies. Let's go to Yehuda, who's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Yehuda, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to profess my point that the executive order by President Trump does not redefine Judaism as a nationality. This can be found on the ADL official website, the Anti-Defamation League, that makes this point multiple times that it's not a nationality. But be it as it may, think about it like this. There are multiple hyphenated nationality. We have African Americans, we have Asian Americans, we have Latino Americans. However, if we are afraid to the point of not being able to maybe call a Jewish American by a nationality, then that indicates that we are at that we are very deep into this anti-Semitism trouble, because we're afraid for repercussions towards towards the Jews if they would be called a nation. I would also like to make a point that, and this is something Professor Heschel brought up before, that instead of out outlawing anti-Semitism and saying you're not allowed to say this, you're not allowed to say that. And instead of that, engaging in discussion as to why Zionism is okay, why Jews are not monsters. We've tried that for decades. There is a organization, and there are multiple organizations that are trying to bring the Jewish voice, trying to bring the Zionist voice in a logical way, in a well-mannered and intellectual voice. However, this is not, it's not being heeded. Mm. And the reason why we're at this point is because anti-Semitism at its core is hate. It's nothing but illogical hate. You can't fight illogical hate with logic. And the only cure to that is what President Trump is doing with his executive order by outlawing it, saying, no, the buck stops right here. If you're not able to, and not willing to have a discussion and to look at both sides, and instead you're just jumping to anti-Semitism in college campuses and to BDS and to hate crimes against Jewish college students, then the only thing that the president can do is put his foot down like a parent towards an petulant child and say, we're not having this in our
country. So, Yehuda, I've got to take the call back from you, and thank you so much. And first of all, let me turn back to Professor Susanna Heschel, because I know, Professor Heschel, you've got to go in a couple of minutes. So would you like to respond to Yehuda?
Yes. I appreciate what you say, Yehuda, and I don't fully agree. I think there are very good arguments to make on behalf of Zionism and the State of Israel, and if those arguments need to be clarified for people. I think that we're not talking about necessarily the current government of Israel or a past government, but rather the principle of Zionism that I think indeed needs to be defended on college campuses in a rational way, and I believe in a scholarly way, that is, in a non-political fashion. It's not a right-wing or a left-wing cause. And in fact, when Zionism began as a movement, there were different kinds of Zionism, religious and secular, right-wing, left-wing, etc. So Zionism should not be aligned with one particular political orientation, and that also needs to be conveyed to students. At my college campus, when I last taught modern Jewish history, I had 350 students. And I told them they could say anything to me. I've heard everything, right-wing, left-wing, etc. We can discuss it. But I want to talk about it, and I want their views to be presented with substantiation, with evidence, and my responses to them in the same way. So, in fact, it's not just a matter of hate speech. It's a matter of arguments, and people need to make their arguments, and we need to respond to them. And I believe that the arguments for Zionism are much stronger than the ones against it. So let's sit down and talk about it, rather than issue fiats about what can or cannot be spoken.
Well, Susanna Heschel is a professor of Jewish studies at Dartmouth College. Her scholarship focuses on Jewish-Christian relations in Germany in the 19th and 20th centuries and the history of anti-Semitism. Professor Heschel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, Jonathan Tobin, I'm going to come back to you in a second here, but Michael Brenner, you've been waiting patiently here. I'm wondering what you make of Yehuda's assertion that attempts at dialogue have been tried and failed in his mind, and so therefore that's one of the reasons why he supports the executive order and these more sort of direct policy instruments that the Trump administration are issuing.
I wish Yehuda was right, and I wish Jonathan was right with this description. My experience is different. I lived for many years and taught for many years in a country that has very tough laws against denying the Holocaust, against other anti-Semitic tropes, and that is Germany, but also many other European countries. Did this eliminate anti-Semitism? Did this do anything to really create an atmosphere where neo-Nazi movements can't rise or the anti-Semitism is in the waning? Unfortunately not. And I am afraid the problem we're getting into is where are the limits of academic freedom, of free speech on campuses, once we start applying this. Laws, I think, are well-intended here, but they won't solve the problem. What we have to do is to really find arguments. And I agree with Professor Heschel. We have very good arguments in favor of Israel, in favor of Zionism. We don't have to agree with everything the Israeli government does. Nobody says that. But I think especially on college campuses, it is very important to engage in these discussions. And there are many. I also don't want to paint a picture where every university college is characterized by BDS movements, anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism. We have, unfortunately, way too many unfortunate incidents for that. But there are many campuses, and American University is one of them, where there's an extremely civilized dialogue. And also between, by the way, Jewish and Muslim students, Jewish and Arab students and professors. And I think there are many other examples for that as well. Now, there are, unfortunately, negative examples, absolutely. We have to fight them with rationality. And I just want to say one last thing sure. to what Jonathan Tobin said. And I appreciate very much that we have this discussion because it's good to disagree. But I take a little opposition to when he talks about people of the left. You mentioned that a few times, and the Rorschach test. You know, it's not so easy. We have opinions on many things. It's not just people on the left versus people on the right. And where do you stand if you're not on your side of the Rorschach test? Are you then, you know, we get a lot of, once you say one critical word about, let's say, this executive order, people call you a Jewish self-hater, anti-Semite. It's just a very a discourse that has become very not civilized anymore. And I think we really have to be careful with the words we use, words like deranged or, you know, if you're on the other side of the test, where are you?
Mm. Well, Jonathan Tobin, go ahead.
I think the problem here is that, you know, I'm reacting to the rhetoric that I heard even on this program before I came on. There were analogies made to Nazi Germany, analogies made to the former Soviet Union. I mean, these are not valid analogies. But I think, let me go back to the substance, which we should be talking about. These are largely, I think these are false straw man kind of arguments to saying that about nationality and about restricting free speech. We already have laws in this country under Title VI about universities and colleges not enabling racism, various forms of discrimination. Those laws are enforced when they're dealing with other issues, as they should be. All this executive order does is extends the protections which are already afforded to other minority groups, which can be subjected to discrimination and bias and hate speech, to Jews who are singled out, whether it's because of perception of ethnicity, not because of a nationality, but because they are seen as Jews and therefore supporters of Israel. This is something which is really an anodyne suggestion. This is not something that ought to be controversial. The reason why it's controversial is Trump. You know, Trump, you know, that's the thing, that's the hinge on which every argument, seemingly about everything that goes on in this country, that happens these days. There's nothing to do about that but to engage in it. But when it comes to a measure, you know, it's fine to criticize Trump when he says the wrong thing, when we disagree with him. You know, I have no issue with that. But when he does the right thing, when he's actually working to combat discrimination, to then flip it, to turn it into, oh, but this is really racism. This is really because we have this idée fixe about him and what we perceive, what we think are his true goals, whether they have anything to do with anything that he's done as president in the last 3 years, then that is kind of a Rorschach test. That is not, you know, a serious, you know, measured argument about policy, but is this, you know, it becomes hyper-partisan hyperbole. And, you know, to get back to what Yehuda was, or our caller was saying about dialogue, there's no barrier to dialogue between Jews and Muslims, between supporters of Israel, critics of Israel, whether within the Jewish community or non-Jews. What we're dealing with here are groups such as Students for Justice in Palestine, which engage in hate speech by any reasonable definition about Jews, about Israel, demonizing Israel, judging it by a double standard, and not just criticizing policies, but seeking its elimination, the one Jewish state on the planet, and doing so in a manner which clearly creates a hostile atmosphere for Jews on college campuses. This is something that any president should do something about. The fact that Trump has done so, whether you want him impeached or whatever you want done to him, this is something that is a good thing if you care about the issue of anti-Semitism coming from the right or the left. And that's why I feel the debate about this and the way it's being framed is just so really unhelpful and not geared towards having a serious discussion.
Well, Jonathan and Michael, in order to keep this discussion as robust as possible, I got to make a little room for a few more callers here. So let's go to Sophie, who's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Sophie, you're on the air.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to call in because I think that we've been hearing from a lot of voices with more of the perspective from the journalist who's on air with you. But I am a Jewish organizer myself. I organize with Jewish Voice for Peace, and I actually was a member of Students for Justice in Palestine when I was a student. And I just wanted to call in because I think that there's a bit of erasing going on of the plurality of Jewish thought that exists in America and exists internationally when it comes to what is the limit of speech that Jews are allowed to engage in. And I just wanted to call in because I love being Jewish. It's a part of my life. It's a part of my identity. It's a part of my family. And politics are hugely divisive, even within my family. I wonder if, you know, anybody listening to this right now, they might give me an earful later. But that's why I find the Trump's executive order so sort of distressing, because it does such a heavy-handed job of ironing out all of the complexity of what it means to be a Jewish American, a Jew in the world, a Jew who has to deal with the reality of what's going on in Palestine right now. And a Jew who has chosen to engage with the largest nonviolent movement for Palestinian rights, a movement in which the Jewish identity is often weaponized against Palestinians. So I think that there's just so much diversity of thought here. And to paint with this big brush that BDS is anti-Semitic, I keep on hearing the callers saying, like, oh, of course it's okay to criticize Israel, but I'm wondering what form exactly they think that possibly takes other than a Palestinian-led nonviolent solidarity movement that places economic pressure. So I just wanted to put my voice into the conversation and say there's way more people out here than what you're just talking about. And I think the threat to the Jewish existential threat that we face right now comes much more strongly from the right wing, from the same kind of fascist anti-Semitism that animated Europe throughout the last 100 years and continues to exist in the United States. And I don't know if that's what's in Trump's heart, but I think that he does embolden people who share that way of thinking. And I really beg you to think about Jews who might be approaching issues differently from you and how that this kind of executive order might be affecting us.
Well, Sophie, thank you so much for your call. Jonathan and Michael, we've just got 2 minutes left here. So Jonathan Tobin, I'll let you offer your last thought to us very briefly so I can give Michael Brenner a shot here. But how would you respond to Sophie? She's saying that you're narrowing even sort of perspectives of Jewishness.
No, I'm not narrowing anything. I'm just calling things by their right names. The groups that she mentioned engage in eliminationist rhetoric about Israel and Jews. Jewish Voices for Peace has engaged in basically blood libels against American Jewish supporters of Israel, claiming that programs that bring police and first responders to Israel for special training is somehow responsible for the killings of African Americans on the streets, on American streets. These are groups that engage in hate speech. This is not about, do you criticize Israel? Of course you can criticize Israel, criticize its policies. If you're about eliminating Israel, if you're about enabling, you know, this is not a, you know, you talk about a nonviolent protest. This, its founder has its, as its explicit goal, the elimination of Israel. It's supported by groups that also support terror. So to me, this is a false argument.
Well, Michael Brenner,
we have
60 seconds left, I'm afraid, but please go ahead,
let
Michael Brenner.
I probably don't agree with what Sophie's views are, but I think we should hear them on campus unless they are inciting hate and hatred. Israel is the best example. Israel itself has so many different voices and parties in the parliament, including Arab Israelis who are not Zionists. And I think once we draw the line to exclude voices like Sophie's, we have to think, where do we go? Where is the line? What is not allowed? So we have to take on the fight against anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiments or delegitimation with legitimate means, with arguments.
Right. Well, Michael Brenner, professor and chair in Israel Studies and director of the American University Center for Israel Studies, thank you so much. And Jonathan Tobin, editor-in-chief of Jewish News Syndicate, thank you as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can profit motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.